Thank you very much for taking time out to come to the special Dean's Corner. We have a really important agenda. We first have some things that we're carrying over from the previous agenda that we didn't get to, the first thing with e-science. Then we're going to talk more about the strategic plan, planning process, so we want to make sure that we give you that feedback. And then it's one of those great moments when we get to celebrate the very best work of two of our colleagues. And so that will be, it's always my pleasure to do that, to announce the awards for the staff member and the librarian of the year. So, and we have cupcakes, as a couple of people have observed coming in, particularly Brian, who thinks we should have them now instead of later. And for all of you who aren't here, you're missing out on the cupcakes. You could be here. So to begin, it's okay. I will just introduce April and Jim. Fish this. Yeah. Oops. Okay. Yeah.
Good morning. I'm calling dibs on all those cupcakes for all those people. We are going to take just about 10 minutes of your time to tell you a little bit about eScience and the eScience Institute. So I'm going to start with what is eScience and what is the eScience Institute, and then Jen's going to talk about the process that we went through and what our sort of future steps are. So really to start with, eScience is not a new field of science. It's just a term that's sometimes used to describe computationally intensive, technology-intensive, data-intensive science. So it's been used really more in the UK and in the rest of Europe since the late 1990s, but it isn't really a term that's globally used and understood. But really, to be more inclusive of social sciences and humanities, a lot of people prefer that term e-research. So really any research that's computationally heavy, that requires a lot of computing power, that requires a lot of infrastructure and that sort of thing. But actually, at the eScience Institute, they allowed for an even broader definition of the term. So they were really interested in any research performed digitally at any stage and at any scale. Okay. So I'm not sure why I use a robotic voice just to describe that, but that's really what we sort of wanted to embrace. So all research performed digitally at any scale, that's what we were kind of all about. So actually, a lot of people talked at the Institute, why don't we just call it research? So a good part of that whole discussion was, since nobody really knows what e-science is or what e-research is, can we just call it research? And I think the jury is still out about that sort of terminology that you have to use, maybe by field, might be field dependent. So a little bit about some context about the Institute. So it really was developed so to respond to those sort of growing needs for e-science and e-research support at academic institutions. And it also gives us an opportunity to learn from each other, from other structured study and planning processes. So it came originally funded by ARL and the Council on Library and Information Resources and the Digital Library Federation. And it was previously only available to their members, but it is now managed by Juraspace, and it's open to any institution, although it does say on their website that this is probably the last time that it is going to be offered. So good timing on our part. Also very good timing because there's national attention to this issue right now. So for example, with those funding agencies. So researchers take on a lot of the funding burden, so a lot of the money that's required to pay for human resources, for equipment, for materials, all that sort of stuff is on the burden of the researcher. So they spend a good part of their job just writing up grant proposals and writing up proposals to renew the grant money that they had received previously. So now funding agencies are starting to recognize that there's a lot of value in the data that's collected or created from the research that they're funding. So not just that final product, but actually all the data that's either collected, created, and they're starting to really recognize that they need data management plans in those proposals. So now another burden on researchers is part of their proposal writing will require that they have some sort of data management plan. And last time when the provost was here, he talked about tri-council agencies. So we have CAHR for health, NSERC for natural science engineering, SHRC for social sciences and humanities research. All of these are really important to McGill for funding and to other universities, so McGill is no exception. And now we have news that they are going to require some data management plans in the very near future for researchers. So it's something that we really have to be aware of and ready for. The other news sort of at this time is CARL. They have a Project ARC working group. So they're developing a library-based national research data management network. So it's something that we can also get in on at the beginning. Okay.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Can you talk about tri-councils? What are we talking about?
So those CHR, NSERC, and SHRC. So three councils. So really the sort of goals of the Institute, the main goal was to develop a strategic agenda for e-research support for research libraries, academic libraries. It's not written in quotes because it's not a real thing. It's a real thing. It's a research agenda. It's just that sort of a stage that would come before writing a research plan, a strategic plan. So that was really the final product for this whole institute, was for us to come up with an agenda. The last one is really, I guess, the important part for us is that we want to turn all of these discussions into some action. But it's actually already started helping us with the process. As we go through it, we're starting to identify like who else on campus is already dealing with these issues and who we can partner with, really, if we want to provide support. But the one thing that we do want to stress, which is that number three there, is that library support can go beyond the data management planning into other areas of research. So if we really are talking about research, then we have a little life cycle view of how everything could look. So the idea here is if we approach it, we approach all of this research performed digitally at any stage as a life cycle, then we could start to see at what stages, like what are the different services, what are the different resources we can envision at all of the different stages of the life cycle, and what sort of collaborations can we make, not just with researchers, but who else on campus, who else nationally, that sort of thing. So not just in the small sort of area of data management, which we mentioned, and data collection, data analysis, but in the product that comes from research, in the dissemination and the sharing, and the discovery, the planning, etc. And then all that sort of life cycle also touches on in the classroom and on teaching as well. So this is how we are approaching it, is a very large definition of e-research, e-science, and then also at a very broad view of research as a life cycle. So next one. I already have dibs on cupcakes.
Oops, that's backwards. All right. Oh, that's okay. Thank you. Didn't realize we had a clicker. Hi, everybody. So I'm going to talk very briefly about exactly what we did as part of this institute. I think April's done a really good job of kind of setting the stage for why we needed to do this and what's going on out there in our community related to this. But here's what we actually did. So the big advantage of the eScience Institute and the reason we participated is that they give you a really structured process to follow that results in good documents being produced at the end. And this is useful because I'm sure you're thinking now, this is a big problem. How in the world do we do this? How do we build partnerships on campus? How do we know what services we should provide in the library? So what the Institute does is take you through a process that helps you make those decisions and helps you make them for your university. So we started out in the process with an environmental scan where we looked at our campus and then Canada-wide to see what was going on. We looked to see how research computing is actually done at McGill, what the relationships are like between the deans and administrative units, who's got decision-making authority on campus in certain areas, where the kind of unwritten rules are about who does what. So we really started to learn who's ahead on our campus and who really wants to do something but it hasn't been able to act yet. So we pulled that all together into an environmental scan document. After that, we used that to figure out who on campus we should talk to. Deans, of course, are major players here, and I'll talk in just a moment about the list of people we actually did talk to. But we used those interviews to talk about what the strengths we had here at McGill were, what the weaknesses, what the areas of opportunity were, and what those people thought we should be doing as a campus in this area. We took all of that and we did a SWOT analysis. If you're familiar with this, SWOT stands for strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And they took us through a process where we'd take a strength and we would compare it against how we use that strength to capitalize on an opportunity, or how we use that strength to overcome a weakness or a threat that's facing us. So you write these statements that say, because we have this strength, we can mitigate these other things or take advantage of this opportunity. So those can get very long. You can imagine this is a big environmental scan. It's a lot of interviews. You start to get a lot of data here. So then what they asked us to do next is to look at all of those SWOT analyses and decide and just brainstorm what activities we might do as a campus. Just don't, no holds barred, just write down everything that is conceivable, everything that comes to mind. And then you take that and you start really planning some support services. You start looking at what we might actually do, especially in the library, but on campus as a whole, to address this. And that life cycle diagram we saw a minute ago is really important for this, because in libraries, actually, let me go back to it. You know, we're often at this phase, the discovery and use phase, right? We help people find stuff, and then we buy stuff, right? But there's stuff we could do elsewhere here, and we want to make sure the services we come up hit those other parts of the life cycle and not just the two ends. Okay, so then we say, well, if we want that kind of service, who do we need to work with in order to do it? What partnerships do we need to put into place? What buy-in do we need to get from elsewhere on campus? And then all of that finally turns into this strategic agenda document that they give us a template for. It includes the opportunities that we see, the risks that are going to happen, either if what's going to happen if we don't act, or what could happen if we do. What are the downsides of putting this service into place? How we plan for change on our campus, how we plan for sustainability of these services on our campus, and then some very concrete next steps. Exactly what are we going to do? We're going to write a report. We're going to send it to these people. We are going to schedule a meeting with X, Y, and Z. So you've probably been wondering who's been working on this as we've been talking. So April and I have served as kind of the core team leading this, but we've had a lot of help from a lot of other people, especially in the library. So Amy Buckland, Sarah Holder, and Julie Jones all worked with us on our planning team and did a lot of these interviews and data collection. We talked frequently with the Office of Sponsored Research and their interest in research data management, and we also talked with the High Performance Computing Center along the way to get some advice from them on how they handle research computing on the McGill campus. And then we interviewed a bunch of people, including the provost, the CIO, a few deans, a few faculty members, and the vice provost for research. Where we are now is that we've completed the kind of formal process that the eScience Institute put on. There were some webinars, which you all got invited to, and we went to a capstone event to help us work through all this data. So what we have are some draft documents at all those stages, but they're not done yet. We're still talking to some people. We're still conducting a little research. We still hope to have at least one more interview. So the early data, we've kind of processed it and gone through the process, but we want to go back and add a little more meat to it. April said something important a little while ago, which is we want to make sure we're not just focusing on data management planning, because that's easy, right? That's something a lot of libraries are doing. It's a clear library service. It's an easy decision to make. But there's more we can and should do, and we want to make sure we're handling those hard things as well. So we're kind of making ourselves think more deeply than just the obvious stuff. So we are also looking at how to tie this in with our emerging concept of a research commons that's coming out of our strategic intent that we'll probably talk a little bit more about later in this meeting. So they're very tied together, so we need to make sure we actually make that tie-in effective. So what are we going to do next? Well, we clearly need to scale up data management planning services in the library. This is something liaison librarians can be doing, and a lot of you are doing, with your faculty, and we can scale that up a little more, definitely. We are hoping to get a more robust version of a strategic agenda document to the Dean's Cabinet soonish. We were originally hoping to do it this month. We've gotten a little stalled, but we're going to get ourselves reorganized and get that back there. We think there need to be briefing papers, very short, on target things that need to be sent to university administration to help them understand what kind of a problem we're facing and what we think we should do about it. And we need to focus on the collaborations across campus. This is not something the library can do itself. It's got to be a lot of buy-in and a lot of partnership on campus. And we hope to make this an ongoing conversation with more interviews in the future. So we do have a blog up from the library's blog infrastructure. So we haven't posted much recently, but we're gonna, as we finalize this process, we're going to be pushing more information there. So that's the place to watch, and we'll be communicating with you as we do that. Did you have anything to add before we wrap up? All right, any questions before I turn it back over? Chris?
Just in terms of services, you said there's some obvious services, but then there's other services you can envision. Could you give me some idea of what you mean?
So, sure. So, well, one other obvious one is a repository for research data, right? A place where faculty can deposit their data so that they can have a stable URL and they can preserve that data into the future and they can meet their funder mandate. Another one might be consultation services about disciplinary repositories for research data, because a lot of disciplines have their own repositories and they don't need to use a McGill one. They can deposit where their colleagues at other universities deposit. So our staff need to be knowledgeable about those, what their policies are, how they're funded, and help faculty use those. We can help me out with another idea here that's not related to data. My brain is so in research data right now. Yeah, so there are other ideas that we have even on paper for this. I just, none of them are coming to mind right now. I apologize.
I don't know if they're on that diagram, but I was going to ask the same question. So how is maintaining a repository different, being more than just data management? Isn't that what data management is?
Right, so a repository is a mechanism by which we can preserve and provide access to research data. I think the services that we're talking about are librarians helping faculty understand what data they should be keeping, how long it should be kept. So you have a discipline that may take raw data off an instrument and process it, and then it becomes something else. Then they process it again, then it becomes something else, and they process it again. Which one of those should be saved? Which one of those is going to be most useful to someone down the road? It's helping them make decisions like that. All right, I'll turn it back over. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much. Clearly, there's been a lot of work going on with this, and it's something we very much need to pay attention to because it's definitely one of those issues of our times that's hugely important. And I have lots of opportunities to thank people for a lot of things, but this was the e-science stuff is really great work. I'm going to talk now about strategic intentions and the whole planning exercise a little bit. I'm going to focus on the more granular priorities that we had a little bit. And I'm going to start out by talking about somewhat about the input that we got. We got trying to find a balance between getting too much in the weeds and boring you guys to death and hitting the high points and making sure that everybody who did provide input feels as though we have seriously listened, because we have tried very, very hard to do that. And I do want to thank everybody who took the time to do it and who met in groups and then wrote something up. It's hugely important for us to have some sort of structure for planning. And there are a lot of people who did a lot of work with this, and I wish to thank all of them. We did get 15 pages of single-spaced input. So people did take time to respond, and that's important. We do have a document that went out to everybody on Friday, and I suspect not everyone has had a chance to read every word of it. So I will hit the high points. We have organized the input into several themes, and we've tried to do it organize the themes in a reasonable, logical way. The first thing that we got some input on was really about the structure of the strategic planning process that we're using. And this is one of those times when I just have to ask people a little bit to go with the flow, because this planning process is different from traditional strategic planning. And so our input is very open and general, and we get as much input as we can. We come up with themes. We filter it out. We focus on broader, maybe 3-year time range issues, but this isn't a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan. It's something that's much more agile. And then we chose to deal with issues that were issues of the moment that came out from the ground up that we knew that people were concerned about, and we said we need to pay attention to those and make sure that people know that we're being responsive to them. So we have a lot of very granular things, of various levels of granularity that are our low-hanging fruit sorts of things. This doesn't look like the sort of traditional strategic planning process or document that you've seen before. It's not intended to. If you think of a progression on a continuum of very sort of traditional strategic planning that a lot of us are used to, with goals and objectives and tasks, and what we did, there's even the Association of Research Libraries is taking what we did to a higher conceptual level. And they are, the Association of Research Libraries, which is our immediate peer group, and probably the U5 group of libraries here in Canada is our most immediate peer group. And within ARL, those that belong to the AAU. In other words, the very largest research libraries, are going through a strategic planning process as well. And the Association of Research Libraries, we participated in some of the local input sessions. Several of us went to Toronto. We took a graduate student with us. The Association of Research Libraries has been having these regional input meetings. They have come up with, and I welcome people to go to the ARL website, and you will see there something that looks even more foreign, perhaps, to people than even what our strategic planning process looks like. I won't belabor it. I just want to talk a little bit about what their vision is and some of the things behind their vision. The vision that they've come up with after all of this input is in 2033, so they're looking, 20 years out, the research library will have shifted from its role as a knowledge service provider within the university to become a collaborative partner within a rich and diverse learning and research ecosystem. So I know you want it, I can tell just by looking at you, you're going to have to think about that a little bit. The other things that are in their document you're going to have to think even harder about, because it's even more general, much more philosophical, forward-thinking than what we're doing. I'm trying to find a via media between the granularity of a traditional strategic planning process that really is not the tool for us right now, and something that is so out there that people don't understand somewhat, okay? But we are going to be going through this more and more, the ARL process, because there are some really important themes coming out of it in very simple terms, and one of those is it really comes down to, in a very, very simple way, librarians are all about content. We deliver content that people need at the right time, at the right moment, in the easiest way for the user possible. Everything is about that. But the tools that we have traditionally used for that are going to be different. And one of the themes of that is going to be probably, we're thinking, collaboration on terms that we have not seen before. We've had OCLC, we've had shared cataloging, we've had some instances of shared repositories, but we are talking and what we think the leadership of research libraries thinks, and from the ground up, because a lot of people have been participating in these exercises, is that we're going to see some cooperation among libraries on scales that we have not seen, where we really do decide, you're going to collect that, we're not going to collect this. You're going to catalog that, we're not going to catalog this. We may be cooperating with research institutes such as the Research Institute at Los Alamos. That is not a research library at levels that we have not done before. The Max Planck Institute equivalent sort of things in North America. That our ability to work with those research level institutes has gotten to the point where we know that we need to collaborate with them at a level that we haven't before. So I have talked probably a little bit too much about this one thing, so I'll go through the others a little quicker. But I think it's important that we begin to get our minds around things that we haven't thought about before, and we haven't thought in the terms that we need to, because this is the future. It's where initiative, innovation, and some out-of-the-box thinking needs to go. And we need to figure out how that works here as one of the major libraries in North America, and particularly in Canada. Okay. So the next thing, theme, and I'm still at the point where I'm talking about input that we got to make sure that I report back on that, was assessment with measurable outcomes. We got significant input saying, make sure you walk the walk. You're an assessment person, Colleen. You know, we need to make sure that we can actually measure and get feedback on whether we've accomplished what we said that we were going to do. And I can assure you that Lori is a great voice for that, and we always, always think of things in those terms. But we're building it more into the process, and there will be more feedback to you on that. Collaborator roles. There was some question about what that meant. How they will be identified and what it means to be a collaborator on a strategic intention. What we mean, a collaborator will be or is a staff member with expertise and or responsibilities in a particular area, and that expertise may be built upon past or current experience. And they're selected by the executive owner of a strategic intention, in consultation with the dean's cabinet. And please note, it's important to realize that although collaborators may form working groups, they may or may not, it's not going to be the same process and exactly the same structure that we had with our plan from 2 years ago. So I think that kind of explains it. Okay. The next theme, user-centered organization. Obviously, this is the bedrock upon which we're building everything. It is our first theme, our first system of action, if I borrow the terminology from the Association of Research planning process. What's really important, I think, to note is that what we mean by this is not only those people who are directly serving users. We know that there is a, that librarians have, and particularly here is reflected in our LiveQual comments and our scores and our ratings, that we're providing pretty good service. We're not pretty good service. We're in some instances, in many instances, we're providing excellent service. But if we're talking about a user-centered organization, when I'm sitting here, standing here and talking to you, the framework upon which I should be having this discussion should be based on a philosophy that just imbues the entire atmosphere and environment that we always need to be thinking about what the user wants. When I have conversations with you, I'm providing service to you. We provide service to one another. We have many people who are partners in service. And it's all of those relationships that we're talking about. And there's always reason to improve. There's always reason to remind ourselves that this is what we're about. So when I talk often, maybe too much at times, about sort of philosophies of librarianship. You know, why do we do the work we do? It's easy to lose sight of that. I've always had to ground myself in wondering why I get up and I go to work and I do the things I do every day in terms of some of these larger philosophical points. I think it's important to realize that what we're about is content and information and getting it to the user as quickly as possible on his or her terms, not on what we may have been trained in library school was the right thing, not on what we think may be the right thing, but on what that person truly needs at his or her point in time. So it's, and that changes. It changes with technology, it changes over time, it changes with how people grow up and the tools that they use and their ways of thinking. And that's our job. It's our job to put ourselves in their shoes and get them what they need when they need it. And to remember, we are this part of this huge film of librarianship and what humankind does and delivery of information. We're a couple of frames in that continuum, in that process. We got to keep it going. We'll do it, but that's what we do. It's important. It's an important job. Okay, workplace climate. Obviously, we know that we have issues with this. We do have a plan that is going too slowly in feeding back more information from ClimateQual, and we're committed to that. We're hugely committed to it. It's very important. We're continuing to work on it, and it's not happening fast enough, but it's happening as fast as we can do it right now. Facilities. There's a lot going on facilities, and people, since this is something we deal with every single day, we try to get a lot of information out about facilities. One of the most interesting things is that we have a milestone coming up with our feasibility study. It's out to bid. We've gotten significant input and interest from architectural firms across the world, I guess. I don't know who exactly they are, but for this sort of thing, we've gotten significant input or interest, and in June, a committee will be meeting to decide which architect is awarded the bid. This is all a process that is very controlled through purchasing regulations, And there will be input from the environment, which is part of the thing that we built into this, saying we have to go out and talk to people and make sure that we get input. But right now, that the whole process is a purchasing process that is determined, that is based upon a fair marketplace, making sure that we have that anyone can bid and do it fairly on fair and equal terms. Okay, so it's very closely controlled, which is normal for us for a public institution, and I think that's well into the good. Library Commons. Again, Library Commons, I think, is one of those, along with the next one, enhancing and augmenting the liaison model, and the research commons are very tight, are tied close together, but people are struggling with conceptually what we mean. What does it mean in real terms? How can I get my head around these different models? What is it, is there really, in the end, how are these things different from what we do now, and why do we have new terms for them, and why are we calling them something different, and what's the impetus and the reason and whatever. And we are going to be growing with these. We're going to be educating ourselves as we go along. By participating in the discussions, we understand them more and more. But basically, what it's all about in the end, getting the information that people, that users need at the right moment, at the right time. And that information is different from the traditional information that was print on a page in a book. And so that we are changing, the models are changing, the how we get information and what information is changing. Somebody recently told, the delivery of information, the representation of a research project can now not only be text, data, it can be a video, it can be a map, it can be an interactive something or other. And those are all forms of information that we need to be able to deliver, that we need to be able to navigate and to deliver to users when they need it on their terms. So that's really what a lot of what Library Commons, enhancing and augmenting the liaison model, and the research commons are all folded together. There's more specific information in this document, please do pick it up and read it. Rare books and special collections. There's a large emphasis upon rare books and special collections simply because there is, again, it's a movement of our times. We have pretty much conquered providing access in one form or another to normal stuff that's published on a day-to-day basis. And we've been doing that for some time, and we can do it pretty well. But nobody has figured out how to provide access to all of our rare books and special collections, our unusual media like musical scores, like music of all sorts of forms. Or our archives, our archival materials. And so there's a huge emphasis upon that right now because, again, what we're trying to do is to deliver content to users. If we have a bunch of stuff that we don't have access to, how can we deliver it? So there is an emphasis upon rare books and special collections, but because that emphasis is reflected in these documents does not mean that we're not interested in providing access to everything, and doesn't mean that we know that we need to keep doing that. And specifically with collection development policies, we know that we need to do something with rare books and special collections because we need to really hone in, and archives is in there, as I've been talking to Lori a lot about. We have to make sure that we know what we're collecting, when we can say yes, when we can say no to either purchasing something but also receiving gifts, because these people have to deal with that on a day-to-day basis almost, and those are difficult decisions. Can't do it unless you know, unless you can articulate what you do collect and why. And We do know that we need to dust off and pat on the head and decide what we're going to do with collection development policies for our general collections, and we'll be doing that within the reconstituted collection analysis and stewardship group that we'll be reforming. Okay. Discovery layering catalog. We get a lot of people talking about this, and we know that this is something that a lot of us are very, very much struggling with. And what we're doing now, and I know it could be really frustrating to people because we want a solution and we want answers, but our community is telling us that there is no obvious solution and there is no obvious answer. There may be obvious solutions and obvious answers in time. So what we're doing, and we can afford to because we have systems that do function, maybe not in exactly the way we want them to, we're in a period of watchful waiting. That's the best term I can come up with. Just as we need to buy ourselves some time for the next 12, 18 months and see how the marketplace develops. And we will stay in touch with that and make sure we know what we're doing. And that's what we're doing. We're waiting to see how some things unfold and some things and how obvious solutions can come up, can bubble up from the bottom to the top. I have been a librarian long enough that I was at the bleeding cutting edge of the development of integrated systems when libraries crashed and burned, including the one I was working in, through two systems that were a disaster. The one good thing in those systems is that you could migrate bibliographic records forward and some circulation data. So that information was never lost. But it's awfully painful to be on the bleeding cutting edge of something, and it's not something I'm interested in doing, not with an institution with as few resources and the importance of the research process at an institution such as McGill. There is no obvious integrated system thingy out there. We're going to need to think conceptually beyond that. So it's really important to again, just have to let some things go. Just let it evolve on its own time and pay attention to when it is. Okay, staff orientation and mentoring program, closely related to training for staff. We were very, very aware as we have, we're developing processes for interpreting our regulations for librarians, onboarding processes for staff, MUNACA staff, IMS, and librarians that we aren't where we want to be. And the input that we got was clear, that we need better onboarding procedures and practices for every single staff person, whatever level there is in the library. And we need mentoring programs as people develop throughout their careers. And we need to be able to have all sorts of different ways of making sure that people are made welcome and comfortable when they come in, to the point that they retire, so that people are always growing. This is a work in progress. We wouldn't be in the plan if we didn't feel a real need for it. But it is a very much of a need, and we're working on those. Okay, and I think, okay, position descriptions for librarians. Yes, we will be doing position descriptions for librarians. It's standard practice in the profession. I don't know, honestly, a library that doesn't have position descriptions for librarians. They are in concert with your role, which is a very standard sort of thing. That's assistant, associate, and full librarian, because we do have librarians as academic staff do have responsibilities that are outlined in the regulations. But everyone also has a specific description of their work. I have, the dean of the libraries does, by virtue of the posting that is out there and this, the description that's formed when the search committee was formed for my, when I recruited, for instance. Communication, again, I mean, the first thing I said when I came here is that there is no way that we can communicate too much in too many different ways, and none of us have it perfect. When we screw up, I'm going to be the first to apologize because I know that that we just, again, have to keep this out in the open. We have got to communicate and communicate and communicate in as many ways as we possibly have time for and as much as we possibly can. So those are all important issues. Does anyone have any questions about any of this right now? I'll break with this and then I'll talk a little bit about how the website looks for the low-hanging fruit, more granular initiatives. Okay, I think people want to get to the cupcakes, so do I. These are the themes, okay, this is in, I could just tell you that we have very carefully mapped input and original priorities to revise immediate priorities. You could tell we really worked very hard to make sure that we captured everything and migrated it over. So if you really want to know which one was used to be and which one's the new one, there it is for you. Okay. Okay. So anyway, those are all the websites for everything. So you can go click on them. Everything's up there in websites. Okay, so this is what the immediate priorities look like. And this is, we've got the first, this is a work in progress again, and some of the wording's going to change over time. Okay? But for instance, the first one is to set up intranet technology, okay, with early adopters, meaning the people who just want to do it and who are most involved in the development of it will be using it as an experiment to try to get it to work. Executive owners, Jen and Ed and his team, status, there's something called Open Atrium that is being considered. And it's got a yellow dot because we're working on it, okay? So you'll see these dots again. We stole from I think the balance scorecard process at McMaster. Okay, so they're really good. It's one of the suggestions that Lori gave, and I think it's really good because it shows what we're doing in a really ready manner. Anything that has a red light means that we haven't started. And we need to obviously work on our red lights. And if you go down through this, you can find a green, which means it's done, right? Ensure that all electronic theses are represented, available through WorldCat local discovery layer. Jen, Megan, and Sarah, all previously digitized theses, 5,100, are now represented in WorldCat Local. It was completed in winter of 2014. Okay, so you can see that we've gone, you can go and see where we're doing these. They're constantly being updated, and it's, again, another thing that we're trying to do in terms of communication and making sure that you understand that this really is driving what we do. This planning process is real, as opposed to some which aren't as real. Okay, any questions about this? Okay, yeah, Chris. Yeah.
Supervision question, but a request. I think the PDF is still the February document of this. Is it possible to get that on a PDF so I could work with it?
This is constantly being changed.
Okay, so maybe not. Okay, then yeah, in that case, perhaps not.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, and it is changing all the time. And some of the wording is still changing a little bit too, so. Yeah. Okay.
Can I just ask a question? Which of our immediate priorities, besides the thesis work that's been completed, has the most customer focus? I was just kind of looking at the document. I'm just trying to pick out the one.
Oh, gosh, I don't. I'm not quite sure what you mean. You mean in an immediate sense?
Like that has a direct impact on.
Well, I would hope that they all would. I mean, just because, you know, let me give you an example, the intranet one. It's the intranet is kind of like this room. I complain so often to Bruna and Diane that in my next life when I was reincarnated, I was certainly going to have a room where we could meet him without having to go through incredible bureaucracy, that they finally got so sick of it that we have this. And so I think that the fact that we have these meetings in a readily available space helps users, because why am I wasting my time standing up here talking to y'all if everything that we're doing doesn't eventually devolve to users? Same thing with the intranet. There's so many things I've complained about that if only we had an intranet, I could organize the website. We wouldn't have the shared drives wouldn't be the mess that they are. We'd have committees. People would know what the committees were. They'd know all this stuff anyway. So.
Comment to that is, I think it depends on what your job is and what you care most about. Like, some people really care about the dead dog's item, right? That is number one on the list. Some people really care about the library website not changing at inopportune times, right? So it depends on where you're sitting, I think, as to which is the most users.
Yeah. And, okay. It really goes back to who are users. All of you are my users. I mean, because, you know, I'm responsible in some way for every single human being that comes in, that works in this organization in a special way, and every user that comes in that needs our services. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Okay.
Show the strategic intention, the big seven.
We can. But I've already talked about those. We've already had a whole.
The structure is new.
Oh yeah. Okay. Thank you. Okay. So the structure is new. And again, these websites are available. Thank you. Okay. So you can see we've got the executive owner, collaborators as best as we have them now, project updates, and then a lot of project scope, objective, outcome measurement, target deadline, and then our unfortunate red spots here on this one. And I'm
so
the owner.
The idea is that none of these charts for the big strategic initiatives are complete yet.
Yeah.
That's going to be our process from here on out, is working on figuring out all those details.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Enough of listening to me. Now we're going to go to something that is one of the most enjoyable things that I do every year. It's always wonderful when we get to celebrate the good work of our colleagues. And it's truly my pleasure to announce the Staff Award winner and the Librarian Award winner today. And I can tell you that this was a special year. There was huge competition. I mean, it was very, very difficult. I mean, lots of times you hear this, but I can tell you it was very difficult. There were several nominees written, and the nominations were written by people who wrote really, really eloquent statements of their colleagues' work. And you could tell that these people are very respected in the organization. And it was hard to choose. It was really hard to choose. But we did have to choose, and we have chosen. And we will have cupcakes and a celebration in honor of Elizabeth Gibson as a staff award winner this year. I'll bet you there's a photo that we have to have here. And
thank you.
And you've got flowers that you have. And you have to, whoops, you don't, I still get to talk. You have to stand there while I talk about you. Okay. This year's Staff Excellence Award goes to someone who is well known for her dedication to the library and its users in particular. This is what I've been talking about, right? Library supervision is not an easy job, but when delicate service issues arise, the buck stops with Elizabeth Gibson. She is willing to tackle any challenge that may arise. Her colleagues have witnessed Elizabeth's tact and poise under every circumstance. She has calmed frustrated users all the while finding an appropriate solution for everyone involved. Aside from exchanges at the service desk and the questions she fields directly via email, Elizabeth has also provided tremendous support to hustle librarians when various borrowing and user account questions arise via Question Point. Due to numerous circumstances for 3 months this year, Elizabeth acted as sole supervisor in hustle. This wasn't an easy job, but she rose to the occasion, staying on top of borrowing issues and delivering outstanding service to faculty, students, and staff alike. The colleagues who nominated her stressed that her attitude was contagious and kept the atmosphere at Hustle positive in the face of change. The library commends Elizabeth for bringing cheer, integrity, and grace to the workplace every single day. Thank you on behalf of all of us, and congratulations.
I just want to say thank you, but I also am really glad to hear that there were lots of contenders, because there's not a day that doesn't go by that every one of us deserves this award. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you. And quickly, I will announce the Librarian Excellence Award winner. And I won't go through the whole long presentation because she isn't here today. But she will be awarded her award and at commencement next week. And the McGill Librarian Excellence Award for 2014 goes to Sarah Holder. Who joined. And you'll have to watch me on the screen to hear everything that I say about her next week. But I want to make sure that both award winners were recognized today, and now we get to have cupcakes in their honor. So please join me for cupcakes and some coffee. Thank you very much.